Julie talked to us about some of the history of Israel last week through Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, which is a lot of material. I don't have quite as much material to cover tonight, but as we enter into Joshua, I wrote some notes of things that I want to think about or put before us before we start talking about these people. I get it. Julie talked about this last week, and I get it that the people of Israel were punished for refusing to enter the Promised Land. Julie told us about it last week. Moses sent 12 spies in, one from every tribe. 10 of those spies came back with a report that the people were too much. And 2 of the spies said, God has given us this land and we can take them. And because of that, God said, this generation is going to wander in the wilderness until all of those that came from Egypt, or all those of fighting age that came from Egypt, are dead. But I think about it this way. If you were God, and we're glad you're not, and you had a land, a promised land, that was full of pagans, and part of your plan was that your chosen people were going to eradicate them from that land, would you want to do it with a bunch of slaves? These people had been in slavery for 400 years. That's 10 generations. And think about slave culture. Initiative is not allowed. You're expected to do as you're told by those in authority over you. You're made poor and kept poor and powerless. You're considered subhuman by your masters, and you're treated that way. You have no voice. You have no rights. Your decision-making skills are not required. You're not paid to think. You have nothing to offer because everything is taken from you at the lash of a whip, and what they don't force out of you, they steal from you. And then think about the response of the people when Moses offered his leadership, when he came back from Midian. The people were fearful and reluctant and unconvinced from the very beginning. There were no rebels and no revolutionaries among them. Nobody said, hey, good idea, Moses. Let's finally throw off this yoke of slavery and get out of here. Nobody said that. There was no one that said, we're not going to take this anymore. Instead, they whined and complained and asked repeatedly. They asked this. Did you bring us out to the desert because there were no more graves in Egypt? There wasn't room to bury us in Egypt, so you brought us out here. Is that the deal? Now, if you send this group of 2 million people to wander the desert for 400 years until an entire generation passes away, a generation that had known nothing but slavery, what happens? A new generation comes up. One that has the memory but not the experience of slavery. You give this generation a new code of laws, a new way of worship, a new culture, and a new nation. And then, God takes care of them while they're in the wilderness. Food on the ground every morning. Clothes, sandals, tents that didn't wear out. If you or I were dropped in the wilderness, first thought is, where do I get water? Second, where do I get food? Third, where do I get shelter? These people didn't have to worry about any of those things as they wandered. Nothing. God provided for them every morning. They weren't scratching for their food while there's 2 million of them wandering around out there. You get how huge that is? I mean, think about the energy that it would take to just get food to eat every day. And they didn't have to do it. So what do? You become a culture, and you learn to fight. These people, while they're wandering in the desert, were learning to fight. we're moving into a part of the scripture. I mean, it's been this way to this point. I don't want to say that it hasn't been. We're moving into a part of the scripture that gets pretty exciting and pretty graphic, right? There's going to be some things that we talk about tonight that we as civilized Westerners go, they did what? To who? And it reminds me of when Mel Gibson's movie came out about the Passion of the Christ. And I saw an interview with him, and the interviewer asked him, does it bother you that this movie that you poured all of this into, this movie about this important event, does it bother you that it's come out with an R rating? And Mel Gibson said, have you read the Bible? The whole thing's R rated, right? I mean, you read some of this stuff, and it does kind of curl your hair, but it's in there, okay? The whole thing's R rated, so you're warned, all right? Any children can be dismissed now, okay? Here's something else to think about as we go into this. None of us know what it is like to live in a tribal-based culture. None of us do. Our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents came from far away and settled in this land, if in a group, in a very small group, okay? Tribal culture is something that is really foreign to us. The kings that were referred to in the Old Testament that we're going to talk about in Joshua and beyond, the kings were basically tribal warlords who controlled certain geographical areas, okay? They're called kings, they're warlords, all right? There's nothing more to it, all right? And the wilderness that the Israelites wandered in was just that. It was unsettled land that may or may not have been under the jurisdiction of one or more of these warlords. And if it's just you against the world, and the world looks like the Wild West meets Mad Max, family and clan and tribe is everything. There is no centralized government. There is no police force. There's no one coming to help you. All you've got is your family, your clan, and your tribe. That's it. So I think we need to put ourselves in that kind of mindset as much as we can to understand some of the things that go on in these stories. Because your protection and your social environment, your local government, decisions regarding marriage, inheritance, everything is in the hands of your tribal leaders, who you did not elect. They're just born that way, okay? And I think it's important to get a picture of that. Now, we're going to talk about the tribes a little bit, and we'll list them here and there and whatever else. But there's a part of the tribes of Israel that gets kind of confusing in my mind, so I want to lay it out for you. Jacob, whose name was changed to Israel, had 12 sons. As we read the stories, you're going to find 13 names. And Joseph is not one of them. All right? Here's why. When Jacob Israel was on his deathbed, he brought his sons before him and blessed every one of them, including Joseph. Joseph, the one who went to Egypt. Joseph, the one who the family followed there. Joseph, the one who took care of them. He blessed all of them, Jacob did. And then he brought Joseph's two sons before him, and he blessed them as his own sons. Okay? So he blessed his grandsons as his own son. Their names were Ephraim and Manasseh. Okay? So when we read the story, and the tribes are listed, and the tribes are listed many times, you won't see a tribe of Joseph. Or if the tribe of Joseph is mentioned, it always says Ephraim and Manasseh right after that. And as the people move into the promised land, the tribe of Joseph is not mentioned, but the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, often called the half-tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, are mentioned. Okay? So, again, that's to avoid any confusion as we're going forward, as we're looking at, you know, tons and tons of names, and you're like, well, where's Joseph and who are these other two kids? Now you know, okay? Does that make sense? Sort of, pretty much? Did I get it right, Mike? Good. Julie, the other expert, did I get it right? Close enough? All right, good. So let's go to the book of Joshua. So I just realized that I have all my stuff on my table except for my Bible, which is probably important. I don't know if we're going to be talking about this. As we turn to the book of Joshua, I want to tell you about a deal that was struck with Moses. While the people were still wandering in the wilderness, three of the tribes came to Moses. Three of the leaders of the tribes came to Moses and said, "Listen, we like this patch of ground right here." Moses said, "Yeah, but it's on the wrong side of the Jordan." They said, "Yeah, but we really like it. Can we have it?" And Moses said, "Okay, you can have it. You three tribes can have it, except this is the deal. When it's time for the people to cross the Jordan, the fighting men for your three tribes will come with them and will live among them and will fight with them until the land is conquered, and then you can return to the east side of the Jordan." This is an important part of the story that comes out a little later, but I wanted you to know that that deal had been struck before the story of Joshua starts. So, we're going to go to Joshua chapter 1, which is right after Deuteronomy and right before Judges. Okay? This is what I want to read to you as the story is being set up. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful." That's not a hard word. "Have I not commanded you? Third time, be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go." Whenever we see something three times in Scripture, it's really, really, really important. Three times. Be brave. Be brave. Be brave. Three times. I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. So this was God's command to Joshua. Joshua then has a conversation with the folks, specifically those three tribes that he said, "You're going to come with me and we're going to fight," and all that kind of thing. And then we get to chapter 2. I find this really interesting. When Moses sent the spies, he sent 12. 10 came back with a good report, 2 came back with a... Or 10 came back with a poor report, 2 came back with a good report. We can take these people. Chapter 2 begins with Joshua secretly sending 2 spies. You get the idea that Joshua was done with committees, don't you? Get the idea that Joshua wasn't messing around here. Didn't want this to be a matter of public opinion. We're not going to vote on this. We're just going in here and doing it, right? So I find this really interesting that only 2 went, and they came back and they said, "These people are melting in fear." They go into the city of Jericho. they stay with Rahab. And Rahab lets them know that the word is out on the Israelites. You guys have been wandering around in the desert for 40 years. God has been doing big things. We heard about the Red Sea. We heard about Pharaoh's army. We know that you guys don't even work for your food, that it just appears every morning. And we are melting in fear. And Rahab asks to be treated favorably. And they said, okay, if you take this scarlet rope and you hang it out your window, when the time comes, we'll make sure you're taken care of. And that's pretty much the end of that story. They did go out and they had to hide because the guys were looking for them and all that stuff. I remember this story from Sunday school. I mean, I was a little shaken. And I remember this story. I don't remember about the application about how God will always take care of us or anything. I just thought it would be really cool to be one of those guys hiding under Rahab's bed while everybody else is looking for me. I just was kind of thrilled by that whole idea. This is how Joshua chapter 2 ends. The Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. Joshua says, good enough for me. Let's go. The thing we have to remember is that the Jordan River, where the Israelites crossed into the land that God had promised them, was within sight of Jericho. So keep that in mind as we go into the next part of the story. Joshua tells the folks, tomorrow, in 3 days, day after tomorrow, we're going to cross the Jordan and we're going to go into the promised land. And in the fall of the year, the Jordan River is at flood stage. So it's a big river, and then it gets to be a really big river. And the priests pick up the Ark of the Covenant, which was the box that was overlaid with gold that held the tablets of the law. And at Joshua's command, the priests step into the Jordan River, and the water, it says, begins to stack up. And it stacked up, and it stacked up. So imagine, our best river is the Flint River, because we all crossed it to get here. Most of us crossed it to get here. Don Pat didn't. But imagine this. You walk into the river, and at the Elms Road Bridge, the water stops and starts stacking up and stacking up and stacking up. And all the water that was at the Elms Road Bridge goes right by you on its way to the Saginaw Bay or wherever it's going, right? And you've got this huge piece of river that is suddenly a dry bed. And all the people walk across it. And all the people in Jericho are watching. All the people cross the river. Joshua says, okay, one man from each tribe, go back into the river and get as big a rock as you can carry. So they all get these big rocks. I don't know how big ones they could carry. They all get these big rocks and they make a stack right there at the edge of the river. And Joshua says, this pile of rocks is so for when your kids say, how come there's a pile of rocks here? You can tell them the story of when the priest stepped into the river and the water stopped and stacked up and stacked up and stacked up. And as soon as they got those rocks out of the river, Joshua called the priest to come from the riverbed. The priest walked out of the riverbed and boom, the water came back again. So isn't it great that God begins this story with the crossing of the water? And in the middle of the story is the crossing of the water. They left Egypt and crossed the Red Sea into this time when God developed them as a nation. And then the water stops and they cross the Jordan River into this land that God had promised them. So once they get to the other side, they have some business to take care of. See, those people, the men specifically, who had been born in the desert while they were wandering had not been circumcised, which was important. It was a command of God, and yet they didn't practice it while they were wandering in the desert. I'm not sure why. But Joshua says, okay, fellas. And the guy said, we're going to, oh, okay. And so, all the men of fighting age who had not been circumcised to that point, they were circumcised. And I think it's great that the scripture said, after this, they rested. Good plan. And they did it at a spot that has a name. The spot Ouch. They did it, no, it wasn't Ouch, but it was close to it. The place they did it is called Gibeath Haraloth. Okay? Haraloth, you get Rogaine for Haraloth. But Gibeath Haraloth. And what that word means, those two words together, means big old pile of foreskins. Seriously, I told you it was our
race.
Where did I look it up?
Yes.
Everybody knows that. Come on. Seriously, that's what it means. Okay. So if you're looking for a name for your kid, don't go there. Then, after they rested a few days, they celebrated the Passover. And it's interesting to me that during this time of rest is also the time of the celebration of the Passover, because it made them stop. It made them take those lambs from the flock. Remember the ordinance was you take a lamb from the flock and you keep it in your house for 4 days, or you keep it in your little camp, or you keep it among your tents. You keep it for 4 days. So they had nothing to do because they weren't moving very fast except watch these lambs. And they celebrated the Passover of God. They celebrated the Passover, the same Passover that they had celebrated for the first time that night that they were leaving Egypt. And they celebrated that Passover in the promised land. And the next day, there was no manna on the ground. They had lived on this stuff for 40 years. They got up, and every morning it was there. And now it's not. Because God says, you don't need that anymore. You are in a new land where you get to eat this food. I'm sure they got pretty sick of the manna after a while. It's like eating cornflakes every morning of your life. Okay? But it says, the manna stopped that day, and after this, there was no longer any manna for the Israelites, but that year they ate of the produce of Canaan. Everything is new. We are in a new land, a land that God has told us to take. We have a new commitment. We have a new celebration. We have a new dedication. And everything is new, including the food that we eat. And all this happened within sight of Jericho, the same city where Rahab had told the spies, the hearts are melting in fear of you people. So the taking of Jericho is another story that I remember from Sunday school, right? We've got songs about it, we got this, we got that, we got the other thing. Jericho is very famous, but I hadn't looked at it carefully for probably a few years until I was getting ready to talk about this tonight. Imagine what this would have been like for the people of Jericho. Joshua says, okay, whole army, all you fighting men, line up. We're going to put the guard of the three tribes that are going back across the Jordan here in a few years. We're going to put those guys out front. Then come the priests, then come everybody else. And the priests are going to blow the trumpets, and nobody else makes a noise. This was not warfare in the Bronze Age. this is not how things are done. Imagine being in Jericho and watching these guys, armed to the teeth, walk around your city and not make a sound except for the trumpets. There was no battle cries, there was no yelling, there was nothing from Braveheart like we all see and love. I mean, there's none of that stuff. They're just walking around one time, and then they go home. Tomorrow, much the same. They come out, they walk around, they go home. They walk out, they walk around, they go home. This was flipping out the people in Jericho. I mean, can you imagine? It's like you're ready. It's like getting ready to be punched, and then nothing happens. And then they come back tomorrow, and nothing happens. Till the seventh day, when at Joshua's command, they walked around seven times, building the anticipation with every circuit, because they had no idea what was about to happen. And then came the shout and the cry, and the walls, it says, the walls fell down, and they rushed into that city. And God had commanded them, everything in this city is to be destroyed, and the valuable hard goods are to be set aside for the Lord. Had made that very plain, very plain. So they burned the whole city and everything in it. But they put the silver and the gold and the articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord's house. But Joshua spared Rahab the prostitute with her family and all who belonged to her, because she hid the men Joshua had sent as spies to Jericho. And she lives among the Israelites to this day. I don't think that part's true anymore. Few days later, they've got a great victory under their belt. And a few days later, Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, to the east of Bethel, and told them, go up and spy out that region. So the men went up and spied out Ai. And they came back to Joshua with this report. This place is a pushover. There aren't very many people there. We've got this great victory. We've got thousands of fighting men. Listen, this is a mere dust-up. We've got this. So Joshua listens to his spies, and he sends 1,000 guys up to Ai, and it does not go well. They are routed. They get their tails kicked, and they come running home. About 30 of them died, it said. 30 of the Israelites died in this attack. Wait a minute. Didn't we just roll over Jericho? And now we've got problems? Our second battle, and we've got problems? So it says that Joshua laid on his face before the Ark of the Covenant. And the Lord said to Joshua, stand up. What are you doing down on your face? Israel has sinned. They have violated my covenant, which I commanded them to keep. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen. They have lied. They have put them in with their own possessions. So remember, tribal society. One by one, the leaders of the tribes march by Joshua. And I don't know, I assume they use the Urim and the Thummim to decide that this tribe has a problem. And then, so they separate the tribes and they bring the clans until they get to, this clan has a problem. And then they start bringing the families until they come to a certain family, and then they come to a certain man whose name is Achan. Joshua said to Achan, my son, give glory to the Lord, the God of Israel, and honor him. Tell me what you have done. Do not hide it from me. And Achan confessed that he took some stuff when they were at Jericho. when I saw the plunder, when I saw in the plunder a beautiful robe from Babylon, I thought, my lovely wife would look really good in this. It doesn't say that, but that's probably what he thought. I'll take something home for the honey, right? And I saw 200 shekels of silver and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels. But he could hardly carry it. I coveted them and took them. They are hidden in the ground inside my tent with the silver underneath. So they went and dug up the ground in his tent and found exactly what he had described. And then they took him and the silver and the robe and the gold bar and his sons and daughter and his cattle and his donkey and his sheep and his tent and all that he had into the valley of Achor. And Joshua said, why have you brought this trouble on us? The Lord will bring trouble on you today. And then all Israel stoned him. And then after they had stoned the rest, they burned them. And over Achan, they heaped up a large pile of rocks, which remains to this day. And then the Lord turned from his fierce anger. Therefore, that place has been called the Valley of Achor ever since. Achan didn't know to take it seriously. Joshua took it seriously. So did the rest of the folks. Yes.
So the 30 people died because he stole the stuff.
30 people died because God's favor was not with them. God had promised, I will go before you in this land. I will drive the people out before you. But they didn't hold up their end of the deal. They had disobeyed, and God withdrew his hand. And they got their tails kicked. Now, the next part is really, yeah, Julie.
Well, I was just going to say, I think that's a good illustration that it's easy to think that our actions only affect us. But our actions do have a ripple effect into the community. And obviously this was a radical consequence for the community. But I think it's a good illustration that our actions don't affect just us.